They sold for about $80, as I remember. A lot of money for a rock. But people were lining up to buy them. Of course, they weren't just rocks. They had been carefully polished and were inscribed with such lofty words as love and peace, which had been carved onto their smooth surface. I have to admit, they were beautiful. Well crafted, yet simple. There was something about them that just sort of grabbed your attention. These stones meant something. Something more than the simple word that had been inscribed on its surface. They were symbols, not just of love or joy or peace. They stood for things that last, or at the very least, for the hope that they would. People were not standing in line to buy a piece of paper fresh from the printer that proclaimed love, or a block of wood that was shaped to announce joy, or a fabric banner for the front yard that celebrated peace. They were buying stones, because stones last. They're strong, reliable, permanent. Exactly what we hope for when it comes to love, or peace, or welcome, or joy. If you want something to last, then make it out of stone. We all know this, and Jacob knew it too. We usually think of Jacob as the conniving son of Isaac, or the man who wrestled with an angel on the banks of the Jabbok River, demanding a blessing, coming away not only with a limp, but with the new name, Israel. But there is also that story that we heard today, when Jacob lays his head on a stone pillow and dreams of a ladder reaching toward heaven. A dream in which God makes some pretty big promises. Know that I am with you and will keep you wherever you go. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. What Jacob does next is one of the more noble things that we see him do. He takes that stone which had been his pillow and he uses it to build a pillar, an altar of sorts. He pours oil over it, anointing it, making it holy, and he makes a vow to God. The Lord shall be my God, he says, and this stone which I have set up for a pillar shall be God's house, and of all that you give me, I will surely give you one tenth. Jacob's stone pillar was a proclamation to the world that his God, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, was a God who could be trusted. This was a God who was not going anywhere. This was a God whose love and mercy were as lasting as stone. In a few moments, we will sing that great hymn, one of my favorites, Come, Thou Fount of Every Blessing, which includes this line in the second verse. Here I raise my Ebenezer, hither by thy help I've come. Now, you've probably sung this hymn dozens, if not hundreds of times, but have you ever wondered what on earth an Ebenezer is? It's actually a reference to another story in the Old Testament from 1 Samuel chapter 7. Israel had lost the Ark of the Covenant. Actually, the Philistines had captured it. But now they've gotten it back, and Samuel addresses the people of Israel. And then Samuel takes a stone and sets it up as a sort of monument, a reminder of where they've been and how God rescued them. And called the stone Ebenezer, for he said, the Lord has helped us. Ebenezer means literally the stone of help. So Samuel was setting up a monument to God's rock steadiness. God had come through for the people of Israel again. And so when we sing that second verse of Come, Thou Fount of Every Blessing, we are making that story our story. We are claiming that story as our own story. We are proclaiming with our voices that what God has done before, God is doing again. We are here because of God's help and God's help alone. God is our rock. There is something comforting about things that are set in stone, and nothing is more set in stone than God's love for us. There should be no doubt about that. God's love for us is rock steady. Just read the stories of Israel and the early church. God is faithful over and over and over again, no matter how many times we mess it up, miss the point, or wander off. We know the stories of faith and transformation and new life, but still we often convince ourselves that our own plight is set in stone, that who we are is who we will always be. But here's the thing. God is our rock. God is steady and sure, unchangeable, steadfast and faithful. But we also believe that we can be changed, that God can and does change people. We believe, after all, in resurrection. But do we really? Or do we sometimes think that our own lot in life is set in stone, with no possibility for change, for growth, for new beginnings? Anytime we begin a sentence with those stony words, "I never." Anytime we listen to those critical, limiting voices of those who tell us exactly who we are and who we will always be. Anytime we let ourselves get stuck, resigned to the way things are meant to be. "I've never been very good at math. I've never been much of an athlete. I've never been able to carry a tune. I could never get up and talk in front of a group. I'm not very good at asking people for help. That's just not me. There's no way." Anytime we say such things, believe such things about ourselves, we are denying the power of God to change our lives. We all have these ideas about ourselves, pictures of who we are, who we've always been and always will be, static images cut in stone. Some of us look at the challenges of this world and retreat, preferring to be one of those anonymous stones that you might find in the middle of a field somewhere. Others are strong and stubborn, refusing to change or fit in or make life more livable for someone else. These are the stones that stick out in the middle of the path, tripping up any who pass by. Don't expect them to change, much less move from the path. That's just the way they are, like it or not. We all pick and choose what kind of stones we will be. We all have times when we just want to hide and be anonymous and pray that they, whoever they are, might choose somebody else. And then there are times when we feel just like letting the world know that we have no intention of changing or moving out of the way. And it's not just the way we see ourselves. We figure that we've got other people pretty well pegged, too. You know how Jack is. He'll never go for that. I know how Linda can be, and I'll be the first to tell you she's going to say no. The truth is, it's easier to get a handle on things and on people that are set in stone. Once we've got each other figured out, there's no need to spend all that time trying to understand another person's life, another person's experience. We seem to know exactly how life is or how it must be for the rich or the poor, for the single mom or the addict. Their lives, like ours, are pretty much set in stone. That's just the way things are, the way they will always be. But not if we believe in resurrection. Not if we really believe that the old life is dead and gone and a new life has begun. That's the good news, my friends. God's promises are etched in stone, but our life, our fate, is not. In our text this morning, Peter is telling us that we are stones. Stones that God is going to use to build us into a spiritual building so that together we can give glory to God. But these are no ordinary stones. These are not static, immovable, dead stones. These are living stones, Peter's talking about. We thought stones were dead, but what if stones could live? What would it mean for God to build a house out of stones that were alive? Let's try to imagine how it would be. Let's imagine that these stones which God is going to use are not just lying around, waiting to be picked. Let's imagine that these stones have their own ideas about where and how they want to be used. Let's imagine that there are some stones who have no interest in being part of this house that God's building. And imagine that there are other stones who want desperately to be a part of the house, but have their own ideas about where they should fit in and where others should as well. And imagine that there are a few stones who are glad to help out, fill in a gap, but maybe not for too long, because after all, they want to keep their options open. And imagine there are some stones who are willing to cooperate as long as they get their own way, and other stones who are too small or have crumbly edges and who are told to stay in their place. You get the idea. A house built with living stones would be a precarious kind of structure. There would have to be some give and take for it to work. There would have to be some selflessness, some sacrifice, some willingness to fill a place within the wall, even if it is not where you had hoped or planned to be. Like living stones, Peter tells us, let yourselves be built into a spiritual house, to offer spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God. Let yourselves be built. That's the key. Living stones, with their own desires and needs, must let themselves be used by God to build a house. They must let themselves be used by God to build a church. The church is not a building made of brick or stone. The church is a living body, always changing, always rearranging, always in the process of being built. On our own, we would tumble into a big pile of rubble. But Christ is our cornerstone, our foundation, the rock on which we stand. The good news is that God does not take us as the already figured out, set in stone people. God builds the church with living stones. Stones that are full of life, full of possibility. Together, and with Christ as our cornerstone, we are solid and strong, never static and staid. So let yourselves be built. Let yourselves be built as living stones. Let God use you as God sees fit. Don't limit God or yourself or others because you think your life, your ways, your abilities, your faith, or your lack of it are set in stone. We are living stones. We believe in resurrection. Let yourselves be built. And I want to let you know that I've seen it happen. So I know it's possible. I've seen God use people in ways that they never expected. I've seen the church grow strong as new stones are added and space is made for them. I've seen it happen when people do change, when they become something other than what or who they've always been. I've seen it happen. God at work, building his house, changing lives, not once for all time, but anew each and every day. The good news is that the church is alive, my friends, because we are living stones built on the sure and steady rock of God's love. That's the good news. I hope you will believe it. Thanks be to God.